It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about a man neither short nor small. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight and every other Wednesday night, I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of J.C. Fields is none other than your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley. Now get your ticket ready, take your seats in our theater of the minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by J.C. Fields and performed by Paul J. McSorley. In it, we take a front row seat to another shorty small adventure. Now, without further ado, I present to you A Midnight Mist. Shorty Small, a man neither short nor small, ducked into the small coffee shop a few blocks off Bourbon Street. He stood in the entry and glanced around the busy place for the man who requested the meeting. Far in the back against a wall sat Homer LaCroix, waving his hand in a frantic manner to get Small's attention. When the big man reached the table, he grumbled, "Put your arm down, Homer. Just wanted to make sure you saw me." "How could I not? I felt the breeze you created from the door. At least I got your attention." "Yeah, whatever. Why the meeting?" "I haven't seen you since you and Claire returned from New York. How'd it go?"
"Fine." "Just fine?"
"Yes, Homer, just fine. Now why the meeting?"
"Heard you and Claire got married."
"Where'd you hear that?"
"Around."
Rolling his eyes, the big man nodded. "Yeah, we got married."
"Congratulations. You don't have any plans to move, do you?"
"Maybe." LaCroix's eyes grew wide.
"What you mean, maybe?"
"Maybe means we haven't decided yet."
"Oh, Shorty, you can't do that to me. You gotta stay here."
"Why?"
"Your job's here."
"The only reason I'm here is because you offered me a job. I've been offered one in New York."
"Think about me, Shorty. If you leave, I'll be out on the streets."
Small gave LaCroix a derisive smile. "You're telling me this is all you do? Meet with me?"
"No, I do other things."
"Such as?"
"Well, you know, stuff for the tourism board."
"Whatever, Homer. Why the meeting?"
"Were you aware New Orleans has been experiencing a lot of fog lately?"
"What's so unusual about that, Homer? We always get fog this time of year."
"I know, but this fog's different."
Taking a deep breath and rolling his eyes, Small said,
"Okay, I'll bite. What's different about it?"
"People are dying." Leaning forward from across the table, Small raised an eyebrow.
"People are what?"
LaCroix nodded.
"You heard me. People are dying."
"From fog?"
"Yes."
With a chuckle, Small leaned back and crossed his arms.
"Homer, someone is pulling your leg. Nobody dies because of fog, unless there's a serious accident on the freeway." "While you were gone, there's been a number of tourists found dead, particularly after a foggy night."
"Where?"
"In and around the French Quarter. Nowhere else."
"Cause of death?"
The two men grew quiet as a waitress set coffee and a beignet in front of Small. Homer pointed to it. I ordered that for you. Thanks. Back to my question. How'd they die? LaCroix took a sip of his coffee and studied the tabletop. Autopsies were inconclusive. They had to find something wrong. The lanky Cajun just shook his head. How many? Since you left, 7. It's been foggy that much? Yeah. Remaining silent, Small sipped his coffee and took a bite of his beignet. Male or female?
Both.
Huh. They have security recordings of 4 of the deaths. Okay, that sounds promising. Nah, it's not. They're just weird. The big man remained quiet as he sipped his coffee. Homer did not look up. What's weird about the security videos, Homer? The fog gets thicker behind the victim and then suddenly surrounds him. You lose sight of the person for about 60 seconds and then it dissipates. What is left is a body lying down the sidewalk not moving. What does the police department say? They're claiming the security cameras are faulty. Small took another sip of his coffee and then finished his beignet. He stared at the contents of the mug and chewed. What does the tourism board think? Oh, Shorty, as you can imagine, they're freaking out. Of course, they always do. They have reason. Hotel reservations are being canceled. The restaurant group is claiming their business is down so much they're withholding their dues until this issue is resolved. Tilting his head slightly, he asked, when did it start? The day after you left for New York. A month? He stood and gulped another swig of coffee. Who has the videos? Your buddy, Police Captain LeCompte. I guess I'll go see him. Better hurry. The chairman of the tourism board made an appointment for you at 11 a.m. He did, huh? LaCroix nodded. My usual fee? And a bonus if you get this resolved in a day or so. Small put a $5 bill on the table. That's for the coffee and beignet. Tell the chairman I expect the bonus no matter when I get it resolved. He walked out of the cafe. 11 a.m. the same day.
I didn't know if you were coming back to New Orleans or not, Shorty.
Lance LeCompte offered his hand as Small entered his office. The two men shook. The big man shrugged.
I'll let you know if Claire and I decide to leave the area, Captain. You've always been straight with me. Rumor on the street is you and her got married.
We did. Her dad's health was declining, so we decided to have the ceremony there.
How is her father now?
It appears reconciling with his daughter helped. He started walking without assistance before we left.
Well, glad you're back.
I understand you have a problem. LeCompte nodded.
Right up your alley, Shorty. Want to see the videos?
Main reason I'm here.
Follow me.
5 minutes later, the two men stood in the lab while a technician started the recording. LeCompte said,
This is the first victim. I won't comment until you've seen it.
Small folded his arms as he watched a man enter the camera view and stop. The swirling mist surrounded him, obscured details of his appearance. He reached into his pocket, retrieved a pack of cigarettes, then lit one. As soon as he returned the pack to his coat pocket, the swirling mist thickened around him. The shadow of the figure stiffened and collapsed. Then, just as quickly, the fog dissipated. The technician stopped the video. LeCompte turned to Small.
What do you think?
What happened to the guy?
Dead.
Knowing what LaCroix had told him, he asked the question anyway.
Cause of death? Autopsy found nothing.
Doctors think his heart suddenly stopped.
Anything taken?
Nope. Small's lips twitched. What's the official story?
Muggings.
Men and women? LeCompte nodded. Were you aware, due to the national media attention, hotel reservations are being canceled and restaurants are up in arms about business being off? The detective shrugged.
I've heard that.
What do you think is going on, Captain?
If I knew, we could stop it. This is beyond anything I've ever encountered. am inclined to hand the investigation over to you. Should I feel privileged? I wouldn't. Can I see the other videos? Turning to the technician, LeCompte said, show him. Small sat in his SUV after the meeting. All the videos were the same. The fog intensified around the victim and they dropped. Armed with a copy of one of the videos, Small started his vehicle, backed out of the parking slot, and steered toward Tulane University. Carmen Fowler, PhD, a self-proclaimed student of New Orleans history and a professor of anthropology, smiled as he entered her office.
What a pleasant surprise to see you, Shorty.
Do you have a few minutes for me, Professor?
Always for you. Come in and have a seat. Sorry for the mess, but I haven't gotten around to getting all these books packed away yet.
Thank you. Small entered the disorderly office and moved a stack of books off a chair in front of her desk before he sat. Giving him a motherly smile, she said,
I understand you and Claire got married in New York?
Damn, it's hard to keep a secret around here.
Claire stopped by my office early this morning and told me. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She also said you two were thinking about moving back east.
We haven't made a decision yet. It kind of depends on her father's health. Plus, she still needs a few more semesters to complete her degree. The professor nodded.
What can I help you with today, Shorty?
In your studies, have you ever run across a tale of mysterious fog that attacks humans? Dr. Fowler furrowed her brow and studied the big man for a few moments. She stood and went to a stack of books sitting on her small conference table. After rummaging through the pile, she picked one up and returned to her chair behind the desk. She looked at the index and then flipped pages. Finding the correct one, she read in silence. After several minutes, she looked up.
I thought I remembered something about an old Scottish Gaelic legend.
Tapping the page, she handed the volume to Small.
It's an old folk tale called The Big Grey Man of Ben MacDhu. That is the peak of the second highest mountain in the British Isles. Not sure why it is called Ben MacDhu, but it is said to be haunted. There's a picture of the place on the page I just handed you.
Small took the book and examined the image. Looks desolate. She smiled.
There are similar accounts of a grey man in both Irish and Welsh folklore. The figure is semi-corporeal, silent and hides in fog to prey on unsuspecting travelers.
If these legends are from the British Isles, why would it manifest itself in New Orleans? I thought this area was settled by French and Spanish.
That's a good question, Shorty. The French sold 828,000 square miles to Thomas Jefferson for $15 million on April 30, 1803. He did it to protect trade routes to the West Coast. But before that, the area was heavily settled by the Scotch-Irish. They've had a tremendous influence on the culture of New Orleans, starting in the mid-1700s and beyond.
Any reports about what the thing looks like? The professor shook her head.
Despite the many encounters on the mountain, few have reported seeing the entity. Those that have report a tall, thin creature with dark skin and hair. The victims report a feeling of unease just before the encounter and the sound of crunching gravel behind them.
So, not all accounts are fatal? She shrugged.
Apparently not. Why the interest, Shorty?
You've heard about the recent muggings, haven't you?
Yes.
The security camera videos I've seen show a fog engulf the victim and they fall dead. Autopsies are inconclusive about cause of death.
Oh dear.
The professor returned her attention to the volume open in front of her.
According to a 1925 account by a member of the Royal Geographical Society, a man named J. Norman Colley reported footfalls on loose stones behind him. The incident unnerved him. When he turned around and saw nothing but swirling fog, he ran 5 miles to escape the mist.
But he remained unharmed, right?
According to his journal, yes.
Professor, can you find any other incidents besides the one at the peak of Ben MacDhu?
Yes, in the mountainous regions of Wales. But that apparition only preyed on children. You have to remember, Shorty, during the 19th century, the largest group of immigrants to this country were Scots-Irish. While that was almost a century and a half ago, they also brought their heritage and legends with them.
I doubt a legend killed the tourist, Dr. Fowler.
You never know, Shorty. Who's to say the legend didn't immigrate as well?
The big man contemplated the professor for a few moments and then shrugged. Didn't think of that. Any idea why it took so long to show itself here in New Orleans? She smiled but just shook her head. Small stood and returned the smile. Thanks, Professor. At least I have a little background now.
Anytime. Stop by more often. I enjoy our conversations.
Midnight, two nights later. Benjamin Deaton, a medical equipment representative for a major manufacturer, stared at his image in the mirror behind the bar. He hated his job and hated the fact he spent more time in hotels than his own bed. To add insult to injury, two women separately rejected his proposals to accompany him to his room. Losing count on the number of scotches consumed during the evening, he knew his ability to stand without staggering would soon be lost if he consumed another. So after settling his tab with the bartender, he left for the walk back to his hotel. The fog on Bourbon Street gave him a sense of isolation in the busy tourist area. He could hear others on the street, but the dense mist obscured details of his fellow revelers. Loud footsteps behind him could be heard as he slowed to let the person pass. As the sound descended on Benjamin Deaton, the fog intensified around him. A sense of vertigo and foreboding washed over him as his world turned black. Shorty Small watched as EMTs loaded the body into an ambulance. He turned to LeCompte.
When? Body was found a little after 2 in the morning. I might also mention how dense the fog was last night in this part of the French Quarter.
Any witnesses?
Nope.
The comp's concentration turned from the ambulances to his friend beside him.
We found a bar he occupied most of the night. Bartender said he was definitely overserved. Also got shot down by 2 different, escort types because he was so drunk.
I didn't see any wounds on him.
Same as the others. No marks of any kind.
Huh. Small pursed his lips. Does that make number 8?
Actually 9. We had a survivor 2 nights ago.
Raising an eyebrow, the big man studied the policeman.
Holding out on me? Not really. She won't talk about it to anyone, except her priest.
Did you explain to the priest how important it is to talk to her?
A sly smile appeared on the captain's lips. More than a couple of times. The priest told me late last night she would only talk to the men who rid the swamp of the Rougarou.
Who the hell knows about that?
Apparently, the woman is the granddaughter of someone you know, Madame Adriana.
Small tilted his head.
Didn't know she had a granddaughter. The family left the New Orleans area. I wasn't aware they did.
When?
Last summer, just before she passed. Well, that explains why she knew who you were, Shorty.
Where can I find her? LeCompte handed him a card with an address on it.
Let me know what she says.
Studying the card, the retired hitman recognized the address. It was the hotel where he first stayed after moving to New Orleans. Karina Adriana shook Shorty Small's hand. She was a petite woman, much like her grandmother. She also had Madame Adriana's eyes, crystal blue with an innate intelligence behind them.
I am very pleased to meet you, Mr. Small. My grandmother held you in high esteem.
I'm glad to meet you as well, Ms. Adriana.
Please, call me Karina.
She turned to the priest who had introduced the two.
Father, can you give Mr. Small and I a little privacy?
The priest bowed and left the hotel room.
Small said, I am sorry for the loss of your grandmother, Karina. She was a special friend to me.
Yes, she was an extraordinary woman.
She wrapped her arms around herself and turned toward the one window in the hotel room. Staring out, she remained quiet for a while. Finally, she turned and said,
My grandmother said you had an unusual ability to see through the bullshit and get straight to the point. Is that true, Mr. Small?
Folding his huge arms, he tilted his head slightly.
Depends on your definition of BS.
The police don't believe there's evil living within the fog, do you?
He remained quiet. She continued.
I stared into the eyes of Satan the other night. The only reason I am still here is because of this.
She opened her fingers and let a rosary unfurl. Hooked around her thumb, it dangled and slowly twisted, the cross reflecting the light from the window.
"If I had not been wearing this around my neck, I would be lost like the others."
Small walked up to the woman and studied the beads and cross.
"It looks like the one your grandmother wore."
"That's because it is."
She handed the rosary to Small.
"She gave it to me on her deathbed. It has kept me safe ever since. When the fog surrounded me the other night, I felt the presence of pure evil. My hand immediately grasped the cross on the end, and I started praying the rosary. The temperature dropped, and I heard a shrill screech, after which the fog dissipated."
The big man held the object with reverence and caressed the crucifix with his thumb before offering it back to the granddaughter.
"I'm glad you had it the other night."
She refused to accept it.
"If you are to fight this evil that has befallen our city, you will need it to fight off the demon within the fog."
"I'm not Roman Catholic."
"Deep down in your heart you are. My grandmother suspected you were a priest in another life."
He turned his back toward the woman and faced the window, his thumb caressing the bejeweled crucifix.
"I'm not a religious man, Karina."
A voice from his past said,
"Shorty Small, you are more religious than you realize."
He knew who the voice belonged to immediately. Turning, the image of Madame Adriana appeared behind the granddaughter. The ghost stepped around the younger woman and said,
"If you pursue your quest to overcome the true evil of the one who hides in the fog, you will face the greatest challenge of your life."
"Why, Madame Adriana?"
"If you thought your previous encounters were difficult, you will need both a talisman and your faith to overcome what lies ahead."
"Who hides in the fog?"
"It is not a who, it is a what."
"Then what hides in the fog?"
"It is the culmination of all evils you have faced before, including the darkness that once ran through your veins."
He hesitated.
"I'm not sure I want to tempt fate again."
She gave him a soft smile.
"Many fear the demon, but few understand or believe it to be real like you do. That is your strength, Shorty. You have a natural cynicism about the world, but at the same time, acknowledge what your eyes tell you. But before you face this challenge, you must seek out an ordained priest who understands exorcism."
"Madame Adriana, why are you asking me to do this task?"
"Because it is your destiny, Shorty Small."
The image faded, leaving Karina staring at Small. She said,
"Grandmama appears once in a while to guide us on our new journey. She insisted on coming to New Orleans to speak to you."
"You encountered the fog so I could meet with your grandmother?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"Because she wished it. Besides, I was in no danger."
Looking down at the rosary again, Small ran his hands along the length of the loop. Each bead reminded him of his youth growing up in Wyoming cattle country.
"No, I don't suppose you were."
The young woman placed her hand on Small's massive forearm.
"Take the rosary. Use it to protect both you and your new bride."
He raised his eyes to look into Karina's.
"How did..."
He shook his head.
"Never mind. You are Madame Adriana's granddaughter. That's how you knew."
She nodded. Later that night.
"Have you thought any more about moving to New York, Shorty?"
Two newlyweds lay in bed, the digital clock on the nightstand displaying 12:33 a.m.
"Yes, I think we should."
She rolled over and hugged him, her arm across his chest, his arm around her shoulder.
"Thank you. Daddy will be pleased."
"New Orleans has lost its allure for me, Claire. The only reason I'm here is you. Where you go, I'll follow."
"What about your job for the tourism board?"
"I'm an independent contractor. The second they don't need me, they'll cast me aside like a dirty shirt. Better to move on before they do."
"What about the NOPD?
"I'm not a policeman, Claire. I'm a consultant.
they can find someone else to serve the same function. He paused. What about your degree?
I've been thinking. When we move, there are numerous good universities in the area. I'll finish it there.
Silence fell between them as the minutes passed. He could feel her breathing slow and grow rhythmic. Contentment washed over him as he lay there amazed at how his life had changed since his days in Chicago. Days he did not wish to repeat. Off in the distance, he heard a siren. Then his cell phone vibrated. With his free hand, he checked the caller ID. Captain LeCompte. He sat the phone back on the nightstand and closed his eyes. The fog would have to be someone else's problem. He dreamed of fog and demons. The following morning, Small sipped coffee at the kitchen table as he waited to take Claire to the university for classes. He scrolled through news apps on his phone when it vibrated. Homer LaCroix's number appeared. Accepting the call, he said, "Good morning, Homer."
"It's a horrible morning, Shorty."
Taking a deep breath, Small said, "What happened?"
"To board met last night. Since you haven't made any progress on the fog killer and with revenues down, they decided to lay off staff. That includes you and me."
"Sorry to hear that, Homer. What are you going to do?"
"What am I gonna do? What are you gonna do?"
"Move to New York?"
"I was afraid you'd say that."
He paused for a moment.
"The chairman was displeased with your lack of progress. He said you're an expense they don't need."
"Well, if you see him, tell him tough. I don't work for him anymore."
"Shorty, you can't do this to me. I stood up for you and got you this job."
"Yeah, you did. If you were smart, Homer, you put a lot of the money they paid you away and you'll be able to get through this rough patch."
"That's not my nature, Shorty."
"I know. Claire and I are moving. Good luck to you." The call ended just as Claire appeared in the kitchen.
"Who is on the phone?"
"Homer." She frowned.
"What did he want?"
"He just told me we were laid off by the tourism board. Like I said last night, once they didn't need me, I'd be gone." With a smile, she said,
"It sounds like there's nothing keeping us here in New Orleans."
"Nope. I'll start packing when I get back from taking you to school." After dropping Claire off instead of packing for the move, Small headed toward the university library to learn more about the rite of exorcism. He learned the ceremony could be for a specific person or for a locality, namely a parish. The key learning during his time in the hallowed halls of the library became the kind of exorcism needed could only be performed by an ordained Catholic priest with special training. With this information in hand, he set out to recruit a proper man of the cloth. 2 hours later, he sat in front of the Most Reverend Brian O'Hanley, Archbishop of New Orleans, a quiet man who listened with interest to the story being relayed to him by a rather large man.
"I'm familiar with the reported deaths of late, and I know the local police are struggling to explain them. This Captain LeCompte, he will collaborate your hypothesis?"
Small nodded. "As long as you tell him I'm the one discussing it with you." The bishop sat quietly as he contemplated the man sitting in front of him.
"May I see the rosary you carry?"
"Certainly." He handed the ornate object to the cleric.
"This one looks familiar. May I ask how you came to be in possession of it?"
"The granddaughter of a woman named Madame Adriana gave it to me. It was her grandmother's rosary." The eyebrows of the bishop rose.
"This belonged to Madame Adriana?"
"Yes, sir."
"How did you know her?"
He paused. "She gave me guidance on several occasions about how to solve problems." The bishop leaned back in his chair and rested his elbows on the arms and chuckled. He made a steeple with his hands.
"So, you're the one she called Shorty Small?"
"I beg your pardon, Bishop?"
"Madame Adriana was a good friend of mine. She mentioned you on several occasions and told me about how you helped her family."
"Not sure how I helped her family, but she was always kind and encouraging to me."
"She also mentioned you're a humble man."
Small did not comment.
"Very well. How can I help you?"
"I need a priest to do an exorcism on the French Quarter."
"I take it you understand the process?"
"I've done a little reading on it."
"Are you a Catholic, my son?"
"At one time, I've fallen away from the faith."
"But you still believe?"
"Yes."
If I help you, will you start attending Mass again? Even if you don't help me, I will. Give me a few days to find the right priest. Small said, thank you, Bishop O'Hanley. Late that night, Homer LaCroix, still distraught over losing his job, tried to drown his depression with an overabundance of rum and coke. The attempt failed to ease his melancholy, but did manage to reach a high degree of intoxication. The bartender at the small bar off Bourbon Street became concerned about his regular customer.
Hey, Homer, why don't you let me call you a cab?
Why? Do I look like one?
Huh?
You said you wanted to call me a cab. When did I start looking like a cab?
No, Homer, I'm not letting you drive home. You're not in any condition to do so.
I lost my job, you know.
Yes, you've told me 100 times tonight. Now, let me get you a ride home.
I've got no one to go home to. Sad, very sad.
The bartender shook his head. Homer, no more drinks. Time for you to go and sleep it off. LaCroix stood.
I don't need a ride. I'll walk. It's not that far anyway.
You sure? Wobbling a bit, the tall, lanky Cajun nodded.
Yeah, do me good.
Okay, but be careful. Staggering toward the door, Homer LaCroix exited the bar into a fog-enshrouded street. The moisture from the fog closed around him, sending a sudden shiver up his spine. After establishing his bearings, he hesitated before stumbling toward the north. Visibility was so poor, he could not see the other side of the street. His progress toward home took time, because the only way to keep his equilibrium was by placing a hand on the buildings he passed. 4 blocks later, he heard loud steps behind him. He turned and saw nothing. He felt his heart pound in his chest and unconsciously held his breath. The fog thickened as darkness descended around him. A crushing weight pressed down on his shoulders and he fell to his knees. He screamed,
"Who are you? What do you want from me?"
The smell of sulfur and a searing heat on the side of his head caused him to flinch. An inhuman growl said,
"Your soul."
Blackness overwhelmed Homer LaCroix, and he lay still. Lance LeCompte opened a drawer in the morgue. He lifted the sheet covering a body.
"Is that your friend, Homer?"
Taking a deep breath, Small nodded.
"Yeah, that's him. When did this happen?"
"Around 2 this morning."
"Where?"
"Toulouse Street, a couple blocks north of Bourbon Street. He lives in an apartment somewhere on Rampart."
The captain looked down at the body.
"We can't seem to find any next of kin. He doesn't have any here in New Orleans. I think he has a sister in Alabama, but I don't know her name."
"Didn't know that. Where did you meet him?"
"He's from here, but I met him during my days in Chicago. He moved back here a couple of years before I did. The guy never married, Captain. I really didn't think of him as a friend. He was more like a business associate."
"I informed the tourist board. They couldn't have cared less."
"Nope, they let him go a few days ago."
LeCompte closed the morgue drawer and led Small out of the facility. When they exited, he said,
"That's too bad. Without someone to claim the body, he'll be buried in a pauper's grave."
"I'll take the responsibility."
The police captain smiled.
"Thanks, let the coroner know."
"Will there be an autopsy?"
"Yeah, but I doubt it will tell us much. Thick fog blanketed the French Quarter last night."
"Shit."
The captain folded his arms.
"You still planning to move to New York?"
"Yeah, already have an offer on the house, so we'll be leaving in a week or so."
Placing his hand on Small's shoulder, LeCompte said,
"I'm gonna miss you, Shorty. You've been a help to the NOPD.
"Thanks, Captain. I appreciate the opportunity.
Have you learned anything about who might be attacking people in the fog?"
Small shook his head.
"Nothing that makes sense. Figured it was something like that. Leave it to New Orleans to have the strangest crimes. Tell me about it."
LeCompte offered his hand. As the two men shook, the captain said,
"Take care of yourself, Shorty."
"You too, Lance."
A week later, Claire Small finished taping a cardboard box closed and looked at her new husband.
Shorty, that's the last one.
With a nod, the big man picked it up and stacked it by the front door. Moving van will be here Friday morning about 8. He glanced at his watch. I have a meeting at St. Louis Cathedral at midnight. She nodded. Since it's dark outside, I would prefer you not leave the house, Claire. I'll be home as soon as I can.
Be careful, Shorty. Don't take any chances.
He kissed her forehead. Not planning on doing anything stupid. He paused and glanced at his watch again. I'm late. St. Louis Cathedral, midnight. Small watched quietly as the priest made preparations to begin the rite of exorcism. Few individuals were gathered to witness the process. The Archbishop of New Orleans and two other priests prepared to assist the specifically trained father imported from a New York City parish. One of the clerics assisting walked over to Small and said,
"This will be in Latin. Do you want me to translate for you?"
The big man shook his head. "It's not necessary. I'm aware of the procedure. I'll get the gist of it as he goes along."
"Very well, Shorty. The bishop wanted me to offer."
"Thank you." The young priest started to walk away but hesitated.
Shorty?"
"Yes."
"This ceremony will only protect the French Quarter."
"I'm aware of that."
"Just so you know."
"Thank you, Father. That's the goal. Protect the French Quarter." The designated priest started the rite by reciting prayers. First the Lord's Prayer, Hail Mary, and then the Athanasian Creed. After that, Small could not follow the process due to it being in Latin. During this time, he clutched Madame Adriana's rosary. After the priest finished, he spread incense and concluded with a prayer. Everyone walked solemnly out of the cathedral. On Small's drive home, the second he left the French Quarter, he encountered fog, a lot of it. An uneasiness settled over him, one he had not felt since dealing with the Rougarou in the swamps of the bayou. The swirling mist grew denser as he approached the home he shared with Claire. After he pulled into the driveway, no lights could be seen in the windows. A shiver went up his spine as he parked the SUV in front of the detached garage. Without thinking, he threw his Ford Escape into park, opened the door, exited, slammed it shut, and then rushed toward the back door. The unlatched screen door swung free in the breeze, the back door unlocked. He burst into the kitchen and yelled, "Claire!" Silence. "Claire!" More silence. The volume of his voice grew louder as he moved through the house. "Claire, where are you?" A light shone under their closed bedroom door. He burst in and stood still. The sound of the shower could be heard in the bathroom and Claire's voice singing softly. Taking a deep breath, Small closed his eyes and leaned against the bathroom door. He said, "Claire, I'm home."
He heard, "Good, I'll be done in a minute."
Breathing easier, he returned to the kitchen to close the back screen door. With this accomplished, he shut the entry door and locked it. He mumbled to himself, "Small, you're losing it. Get a grip on yourself. Nothing is gonna happen." Heading back to the bedroom, his cell phone buzzed. Swiping it to accept the call, he said, "This is Shorty."
A high-pitched screech made him jerk the phone away from his ear. He ended the call and looked at the caller ID.
A New Orleans area code and a number he didn't recognize were displayed on the screen. He called the number back. An automated voice announced the number was no longer in service. Ending the call, Small returned to the bedroom and heard Claire say,
"Shorty, I can't get the bathroom door open."
"What's the matter?"
"The knob won't turn."
He tried and found the same thing. "Okay, let me see if I can get it unlocked from this side." Reaching up to feel for the key pin on top of the door frame, he found it and inserted it into a small hole on the exterior knob. After jiggling the pin a few times, he heard a click. The door opened. She stood there with a towel wrapped around herself.
"What was that about?"
"You might have inadvertently locked it when you closed the door."
"Maybe. That was weird."
Small looked at his wife, gave her a grin, and loosened the towel she wore. It fell to the floor. An hour later. The only light in the bedroom came from the digital clock on Small's nightstand.
His eyes snapped open. He checked the time. 3:09 a.m. He heard wind outside the window and what seemed to be a tree limb rubbing against the house. The problem was, they didn't have any trees near enough to make the noise he heard. Immediately alert, his cell phone vibrated. He grabbed it and checked the caller ID. The same number as earlier in the evening. He accepted the call. Hello. Whoever called did not speak. So Small asked, anyone there? Wind noise could be heard in the background. A low and gravelly voice said, Shorty Small. The hair on the back of his neck stood. Yeah.
Shorty Small.
What do you want?
I am here.
The call ended. Reaching into the nightstand drawer, he grabbed the rosary and a crucifix. He then shook Claire. Hey, wake up. Someone or something is outside the house.
Huh? What?
Shh, talk softly.
She rose to one elbow.
What's wrong, Shorty?
Not sure. I just got a strange phone call. He handed her the crucifix. Hold this and stay here.
Shorty, what's going on? You're scaring me.
I'm gonna check on it. He threw back the covers and reached into the nightstand drawer again. This time, he grabbed his Glock 21 and held it with his right hand, the rosary in his left. The scratching sound grew louder as he made his way to the bedroom door. A tightness in his stomach increased as he stepped through the doorway. Darkness prevailed in the living room. The streetlight on the road in front of the house failed to provide the normal illumination of the room. Glancing out the large pane of glass, he saw gray swirls of moisture. A scratching on the front door drew his attention.
Who's there?
The same growl he heard on the phone said,
Shorty Small, I am here.
Narrowing his eyes, Small answered, Who are you?
Just know that I am here.
Small let the rosary unfurl from his left hand and pointed the Glock at the door with his right. What do you want?
Your soul.
The front door again shook violently. Small put the rosary around his neck and gripped the Glock with both hands. He pressed his lips together and planted himself in a weaver's stance. Bracing himself, he concentrated on the door as it shook even harder. The darkness and the howling wind outside created a nightmare scene. Small stood perfectly still, waiting for the door to burst in. It did not. Suddenly, the wind subsided and the door rattling ceased. He remained in this posture for at least a minute, anticipating the resumption of the commotion outside. After a glance out the front picture window, he noticed the fog seemed to have dissipated a little. Still, he kept his stance and the gun pointed at the door. He heard Claire, her voice trembling with emotion.
Shorty, please come back to the bedroom. Hurry.
He abandoned his station and ran back to the bedroom. When he entered, he saw her pointing at the bathroom door.
It just slammed shut. I wasn't near it, and there isn't a draft.
He stood in front of her. With the gun pointed at the bedroom door, he said, Where's the crucifix I gave you?
In my hand.
Don't let go of it. His voice matter-of-fact and stern.
What's going on? I don't understand.
I'm not sure, Claire. Stay close to me and let's back out of this room. When they were in the hall, he shut the bedroom door. They could hear the wind blowing hard outside again and the front door shook. Small snarled.
This is getting ridiculous. Stay behind me, Claire.
Don't worry, I will.
When they returned to the living room, the front door shook violently and suddenly burst inward. A thick fog bellowed in. He grabbed the rosary from around his neck with his left hand and started twirling it like a lasso. The cross on the end, the lead point. A dark shadow followed the fog into the house.
I'm here for your soul, Shorty Small.
Pointing the Glock at the black void now inside the house, he fired the Glock four times. The shadow hesitated. The big man released the rosary and it struck the center of his target. An explosion of bright light caused Small to cover his eyes. Then, everything went black.
Police Captain Lance LeCompte watched as detectives from the NOPD searched the house occupied by Shorty and Claire Small. He looked at the husband.
You said you heard scratching on the outside last night.
The big man nodded.
Detectives found claw marks on the vinyl siding on the back and east side, Shorty. Your SUV will need a new paint job from the damage on it.
I figured as much.
Do you know what it was?
No, but I shot it 4 times with these. Small offered one of the bullets from his Glock. LeCompte examined it, frowned, and looked up at Small.
Silver bullets? Where did you get these?
The late Homer LaCroix procured them for a job I did for the tourism board last year. I still had a few remaining. He then handed the rosary to the captain.
I also threw this at it.
Taking the beads, the captain said,
Why are they all black?
Good question. I wish I knew. It won't rub off either.
Well, whatever it was, glad you and Claire are okay.
Me too.
I'll let you know what our investigation turns up, but don't hold your breath.
Wasn't planning on it. The captain and the detectives left an hour later. Claire held Small's hand as they walked around their home.
We're going to need to get this repaired before we close on the house.
Already have someone coming this afternoon to take care of it.
What about your Ford, Shorty?
I've been thinking about that. I was dreading the drive to New York. The vehicle's a little cramped for me. Fine for around town, but for the road, not so much. What if I traded in on something a little larger? She patted him on the chest.
Good idea. Let's get that done after lunch. I'm ready to get out of New Orleans.
Me too, Claire. Friday can't come fast enough. The end. Or is it?
I hope you enjoyed A Midnight Mist, as written by J.C. Fields and performed by Paul J. McSorley. To hear more from tonight's author and the Shorty Small series, check out Fear from the Heartland, featuring over 120 episodes for your enjoyment. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Jiry has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. Andrew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight, and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams. Ha 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 ha.